Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Wednesday, September 25th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have two lovely panelists. John Martellaro is with me. Hi, John.
Feeling so lovely. Good morning.
Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, today where I am, it's also Wednesday.
Oh, that's always exciting. You may need to take a walk when we're done because only because you get better Pokemon in certain cases when it's windy. So that's all.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, the weather totally influences what's out and about. So there you go, Pokemon Go pro tip today. And while we're talking about pro tips, I want to have Andrew. You wrote up something about location data in photos that I think people definitely need to hear about.
Yeah, so the default setting for iOS is when you take a photo, it includes metadata like where you took the photo, which is nice because you can look at it on a map and photos. Now, for privacy reasons, Apple added a feature in iOS 13 where you can remove the location data before you send it. So if you open up photos and you tap on whatever you want, so you tap share, and then at the top, you'll see a little options text button. So you tap on that, and then you can send it as like an automatic, I think that refers to the file format or the iCloud link, individual photo, blah, blah, blah. And then below that, there is whether you want to include the photos data or not.
Okay.
So, Andrew, you were always able to suppress the location data in the EXIF field. If you went into privacy and then location services and you scroll down to camera and you say never for location, that always was able to. That's a brute force draconian way. It interferes with your push pins on your maps, as you said.
Yeah.
But it's always been there. But I think Apple sensed that was a sort of a too drastic approach because it affected every photo.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a way to keep your location data intact on the photos that stay on your phone. And yet when you share and the information's leaving the phone, then you have that option to suppress the data. And that's very nice. Yeah. I'm surprised Apple caught that, and I'm very thankful that they attended to that little detail.
Yeah, and it's also nice because you don't have to, you know, go dig around in settings like you said. Just do it on an individual level.
Right. Especially because you don't necessarily want it obliterated for every photo. And maybe it's just this one. Like, I took a photo of something in my house and I want to share it in some way where maybe I don't want the location of my house to be known. So I can share that one photo and be done with it instead of I have no location data for any of my photos and it might be important to me to know which photos, for example, were shot at Disneyland or Disney World or San Jose, you know, things like that. So it's nice to be able to adjust that setting. And I think that this is another one of those things that definitely needs talked about as we talk about Apple and privacy and, you know, Apple talking about better awareness of what people do with their data and, you know, what happens to it when you choose to share it with others and that sort of thing.
I think this is a byproduct of Apple's mechanism of user feedback that you opt into for analysis of the phone. And I think one day somebody looked at their Mac and realized that a whole bunch of users had location services turned off for their camera and started thinking, why are they doing that? And that's probably the cause of this nice feature that they've added to iOS 13. So that's my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mostly I'm just glad that they're paying attention because that does to a lot of people seem like a very small thing, but to people who need it, it's a huge deal because like you were saying before, like the gyrations you have to go through to disable that are many and in-depth. And so, you know, sometimes it's just too hard. And maybe it keeps people from sharing photos if they have to go through that every time. They just want to make sure that one goes out right. without any information. So
it shows that Apple's paying attention to these privacy issues, which we know they do, but it's comforting right. to see that little detail as sort of a punctuation.
Right. And this is more of an upfront end user visible feature. Like, we know the kinds of things that Apple is doing on their side to make sure that the data is protected and that private things are private. So that's part of why it's interesting to see this approach, where this is something that is putting your privacy and your information and what happens to it up in front of you when you choose to disable that. So I'm really glad to see it. And I assume things like this are just going to continue to evolve and pop up in iOS 13 and in Catalina as we talk about you know, new versions of operating system and
Andrew, how did you find that? Did you see a press release, or did you just stumble on it on the options?
I think I might have just stumbled on it when I was running the beta, just poking around.
Nice find.
Because I don't think Apple mentions it on their website.
No.
Or maybe they do and I just didn't catch it.
I haven't seen it anywhere either, so I was excited to see once you had posted this. I'm sure we will hear more about iOS 13 as we stumble across stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. And I also noticed there's a similar options thing in Safari, which I'll probably write this up as a tip, too. You can send a web page as a PDF or a web archive, which is also pretty cool.
Yeah. That is interesting. And so, obviously, that, like you said, you're going to write that up. And as John and I and other people at Mac Observer find other interesting things in iOS 13 and eventually in Catalina, we will let you know about them. The other thing we want to talk about today, interestingly enough, is your data and Apple and security and what's happening with it. And John, this was something that you brought up that is a very interesting topic for discussion right now.
Yeah, we were in the morning meeting and I asked the group if anybody felt like it seemed like Apple was trying desperately to keep up with all the snafus, the software bugs, the privacy leaks, and things like the Google Zero team that found this flaw that Apple had to address publicly and reassure the users. And then there was the fact that they, in 12.4, they undid something that had been fixed in 12.2, I think. And then they undid it and they had to release 12.4.1 to refix the thing that they undid. So I kind of felt like Apple was just kind of treading water, trying to keep up, more so lately than anything else. And then the rapid succession of iOS 13 to 13.1, the Department of Defense suggesting that users wait until 13.1 came out because iOS 13 apparently was causing problems with enterprise server connections. So, and Andrew and Brian agreed that, yeah, it seems to be like there's a whole flurry of fixes and updates and Apple scrambling to batten down the hatches.
Yeah. And the interesting piece to me is how much of this we've seen sort of publicly, not just security updates, but Apple talking about those updates and talking about the kinds of things that they've been doing or that they think people need to know. And that's been the part to me that has been notable in recent memory about Apple and security updates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not just that, because that one John mentioned, that was pretty serious because that was the one that let people jailbreak iOS 12.
Mm-hmm. The shock. What was it called?
Shockwave? Something like that?
I think it was just shock security flaw. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think you had to have physical access to the phone to do that, right? That wasn't an internet exploit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a physical access
thing
that you had to
But then
to
you
do.
Have those ones that Google found, Project Zero. I forgot how many this was. Maybe 5 exploits, I think. That was, they think, used by China and maybe somewhere else against certain people.
Right. That was the one that we talked about.
Pretty serious.
Yeah. That was part of what we talked about with when we talked about that exploit. That was part of what was interesting about it was the way it was applied. not so much the thing that happened, you know, or the security hole that was exposed, but more that the government was applying it to other people and the way that was utilized against folks with smartphones. So, yeah.
And then finally, I wrote up
but wait, there's more.
Another bug. Yeah. That affects third-party keyboard apps on your phone. Apparently, they can, like, have full access. I don't know what they mean by full access. Full access to what? Maybe the other parts of the system. But they can access that even if you don't grant them full access.
Oh-ho! Yeah, that's not good. Wow.
I wonder what kind of security auditing process these iOS updates go through. Are there coding practices? Or is it an after-the-fact thing? You know, there are classes that are taught on secure coding practices, on how to handle arrays and how to handle code that itself is more secure inherently. There are classes that teach students how to write better code, and then there's after-the-fact testing where you run tests against the code to see if it's exploitable. And then there's feedback from the hackers. So there's several levels here going on, and I don't know where they're all occurring. They're probably all over the charts. But I don't know that there are too many people who are experts on secure coding practices. I think Apple engineers are very good at Swift, and they're very good at writing sensible, smart code, but the art and science of writing secure code is a new thing that's taking place on college campuses now. And the government is hiring people who have degrees in secure coding.
Yeah, and sometimes you will hear about people who are hackers who wear different sorts of hats. And that's generally something that comes out of sort of what side they're on. So if they're people who are trying to, Apple hires somebody to try to hack into their systems or go over things looking for security holes, you know, if that's a person who's sort of working for the good guys, that makes them a white hat hacker. And the people who are doing it for fun and profit, you know, or whatever other reasons they may have, where they're just sort of doing it independently and maybe they're doing it in order to gain access to something that they shouldn't have access to, those would be black hat people for people who are playing along at home and sometimes hear, like, what does it matter what kind of hat they wear? Now you know. And it's interesting to see how Apple has been responding to this stuff. And, you know, Andrew, like you said, like, you just wrote up another one this morning, and there seems to be a lot of this. And I think it sort of strikes me as something kind of, John, like what you assess, like there are people who are very good at code and there are people who are very good at building interesting things and useful things. And those folks don't always see the parts that make it very easy for someone else to just sort of walk in and do something. You know, like, of course, we made it so that the keyboard has to ask for full access and nobody else stopped and went, but it can have full access anyway, even if you don't say so. And some of that, you know, it can be everything from a simple typo in some code all the way up to, you know, like, it never occurred to anyone to test, like, can the keyboard have full access even if you say no? You know, that kind of thing. So
the other thing I wonder about is when somebody proposes a new feature, you know, they're sitting around in a meeting and they have a list of candidate features that they'd like to add to the next version of the operating system. What kind of auditing or other practices go into place to say, before we even think about adding this feature, what is its impact on the other software? How does it interact with the other software? What kind of new code do we need to write? And can we write the code in a secure way that can implement this feature? Or do they just simply say, okay, it's time to put this feature in. We'll test it. We'll bug test it and see if it works. And if it works, we'll ship it. And then wait to see if anything bad happens. I don't know. I wish I had more insight into how they think about that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think there probably was a lot that went into, you know, what people sort of refer to now as the snow leopard releases, the ones I always call the bolt tighteners. you know, where we don't get a lot of new user-facing stuff. There's just a lot of things under the hood that start working better or are improved in some way, or, you know, security things that get addressed.
Does Apple have that luxury in the iPhone world, though? You know, they have the luxury in the Mac world because of the legacy situation with Macs in our lives. But the iPhone situation is very competitive, and Apple's under so much pressure to keep up with the competition and come out with new gee whiz golly stuff and keep their iPhone sales propped up with new hardware and new iOS features. They may not have the liberty of a Snow Leopard release on iOS.
No, well, I think we got, I don't remember which one it was, but there was one a few back where we didn't get a ton of new stuff. But when you talked to developers, they were saying, you know, well, of course, you know, well, everything's different. Everything's changed. You know, people that were running the betas. And I think part of that was because Apple did have the luxury of that release when hardware was evolving so quickly, and when features were evolving so quickly. So, you know, adding Siri and dramatic improvements to the camera every time, and going from a home button that you pressed to the home, you know, to in order to enter your password, to a home button you pressed that recognized your fingerprint and would allow you into the phone and things like that. So I think I remember there being a release where we didn't get a ton of new features. We just got sort of things that worked better and things like that, because the hardware spoke for itself. Like, your camera is going to be a whole lot better and everything is going to be faster. And the home button is better in some interesting way, you know, and we did get a lot of that at one point. And so I sort of hope that maybe next year we will get a mildly interesting phone and a super interesting operating system, because a lot of this stuff gets hardened, a lot of this stuff gets improved, a lot of this stuff gets adjusted, and that's the thing that I'm hoping for most. Andrew, how about you?
Oh yeah, I mean, iOS 13 is pretty buggy so far. Like, the past couple releases, iOS 11 I think was buggy too, and iOS 12 was the stable one, but iOS 13 is more security buggy. So hopefully they can start to maybe pay attention to stuff like this a bit more.
My fantasy is to have an AI that can scour through the source code of iOS and look for exploits. Wouldn't that be cool? Find them before they hit the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be really nice if there were some sort of stable of testers that Apple had in their pockets for that sort of thing. Like, we're going to give you this and, you know, fire everything at it and, you know, let's see what breaks. You know, obviously there's probably some degree of that happening now, but it'd be nice if they sort of stepped that up and made it something a little more interesting. And as we've talked about before, Apple is finally putting a bounty. I believe I may be getting this backwards, but I think there was a bounty for iOS bugs and they just finally implemented a bounty program for macOS bugs.
I think you're right.
And
yeah.
And so, like, that to me was sort of an indication that Apple is taking some of this stuff more seriously on all their hardware, which is important. And it's nice to see that they're doing so. And I hope they continue to do so. And if it means that iOS 14 doesn't have a ton of spectacular features, you know, maybe it's, well, let me readjust. Maybe instead of a metric ton of amazing features in the new operating system, you know, that we find by accident, let's point that out. Maybe we just get an imperial ton of new features, and some of that extra time is spent on nailing down some of this other stuff and making sure that things are as solid as they can be and that things are running smoothly, running better, and optimized in a way that helps with all of our data and everything else. So, Andrew,
why is the Google Project Zero team finding bugs in iOS, but the Apple team isn't finding bugs in Android? Why is Google the leader here in Project Zero team?
Well, I want to know.
Why doesn't Apple have the equivalent?
I feel like, John, your question is, I think I know what you're trying to ask. And I would phrase that question as, why aren't we hearing more about Apple's equivalent to Google's Project Zero?
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
because that's the thing I want to know. Why? Why isn't where's Apple to poke holes in this? And I don't want some trite answer about how it's just so easy to find security holes in Android. We don't have to try. Like, I want an actual answer on something like that. So maybe we can set someone on the case and figure out if we can get an answer on that one way or another. What, Andrew, just go send an Apple, an email to Apple and get somebody there to give you some sort of statement on the record. I know how easy that is to do. So if you could just have that done by lunch, that would be great. I think that's going to do it for us for today. If you've heard anything interesting about security, or if you have some practices that you want to make sure we take into account or perhaps highlight on the Mac Observer's website, or if you have stumbled across something awesome in iOS 13 that's a great new feature that nobody told you about that you found on accident and you want to make sure that we know about it, you can do that by emailing us at observations@macobserver.com. You can talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter. And my favorite way, you can leave comments in the show notes and have conversations with other listeners to the show who are also sharing some of those tips. I'd like to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks so much for coming by to talk to us about your location in your photo location data as a quick tip and the security stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Also, thank you for being here with me today, John Martellaro. Thanks so much.
Hey, my pleasure.
I'm always glad to have you with me, and I always love your perspective on this stuff. So I look forward to reading more from both of you on Apple and security, as I'm sure our listeners do too. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.